Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans, and welcome to another episode of the Peristyle Podcast. This week is episode number 41, and we will be talking all about the upcoming rivalry game, USC versus Notre Dame. Our first segment, we'll have Coach Harvey Hyde breaking it all down for us. And later on in the show, we have a special guest, Gary Klein, the longtime USC beat writer for the Los Angeles Times. He will join us for the first time on the podcast. We'll get his insights. He's been around this rivalry for quite a while. Just want to let everyone know, if you have any questions or comments for us, you can always drop us an email, podcast@uscfootball.com. That is podcast@uscfootball.com. I wanted to welcome in Coach Harvey Hyde again, our first segment. He's always with us. Thank you very much for joining us today, Coach.
Well, thank you very much, Ryan, and happy Thanksgiving to everyone out there. And, wow, it is a big week. We've got a lot of football going on, a lot of turkey to eat, a lot of football to watch and attend, of course, the USC-Notre Dame game. And this is a huge weekend, and we'll talk about it as far as determining who might be going where.
Yeah, this is a huge weekend. I love getting me some of that tryptophan. I love eating all that turkey, fall asleep on the couch, watching some football. Saturday, of course, is the big game with Notre Dame. If you need tickets for that, I just want to let everyone know, our sponsor for the Peristyle Podcast, Southern California Tickets, sctickets.com is the URL, or you can give them a call, 1-800-888-7287. It is sold out according to USC, so if you want to get tickets, just give sctickets.com a try. Coach, I'm sure you're going to the game. You don't need to use SC Tickets this week, right?
Well, not this week, but I also want to let everyone know that they also have UCLA-USC tickets for the game December the 6th, and they are hard to get too, so make sure they call Southern California Ticket Service, and maybe you'll attend both of the games, and you didn't think you were going.
Yeah, definitely. It's a good time for Trojan fans, especially for the rivalries, because, you know, so many years. Coach, when I was going to school, SC was losing to both Notre Dame and USC and UCLA. Now, I think some of the fans get spoiled a little bit. I mean, USC's been beating these teams on a regular basis. You know, 2 years ago, obviously, UCLA had that upset. But it's a good time to be a Trojan fan, even if, you know, you could worry about the national championship, you can complain about the offense, whatever you want. But to be able to beat your rivals just about every year, it's a pretty good feeling, I would think.
I agree with you 100%. It helps in recruiting. It helps in school pride. It helps in you know, the national scope of your university. And by the way, I don't know if you can hear my dog in the background, but I wanted everybody to know who has a pet or a dog. My dog is saying, "Happy Thanksgiving." She's really upset at me because I didn't let her do it earlier.
Okay. Well, happy Thanksgiving to everyone out there. Yeah, Coach, this is one of my favorite weekends of the year. I moved out to Southern California way back in 1989 to attend USC, and I had a tradition every year of kind of cooking for all of the transplants. So I've never gone back home for Thanksgiving. I always stay around here, and we, you know, sometimes you have five people over, sometimes you have 16, whatever it is, cooking Thanksgiving. But just my favorite day on, you know, there's college football, there's NFL, you know, eating turkey, stuffing, mashed potatoes. It's just such a great weekend. And then every other year, when you also have Notre Dame in town, it just makes the weekend perfect. You got all this football on Thursday, even some more on Friday, turkey sandwiches, and then you get to go tailgate for USC and Notre Dame.
You're exactly right. Give me your address. I'll be over.
Okay. Come on over. Coach, I hear you're going to be on Catalina cooking up. You're probably eating like Mai Mai or something on Thanksgiving.
Yeah, I'm going across the sea to Catalina. I'll tell you, I don't know how many people like to go over there during this time of year, but we love it to see the leaves on the ground and little rain maybe coming down, and just sit around and as a family and watch the games. And, you know, when I get over there, see, it sort of captures me. I can't do anything else. And I really like that, because when I'm always here, I'm always doing something, or someone's calling, or I'm having to go somewhere. But when I get over there, I sort of lock myself in the house, and it's perfect.
All right. Well, Notre Dame comes into town, like we said, this weekend. Obviously, it's a huge loss for them. It's funny now when you have USC fans in the BCS kind of rooting for teams that you've already beat, like Virginia and Ohio State, and teams you have to face coming up, even if it's an arch rival, Notre Dame. A lot of the USC fans were actually disappointed when Notre Dame, you know, found a way to lose to a 2-8 Syracuse team that had already fired their coach. Where do you see this program right now, Coach? I mean, there's so much talk going on about Charlie Weiss and all this, but have you been surprised at the way this program has performed over the last couple of years?
Yes, I have been, because it's one of the greatest coaching traditional jobs in the country. You put that with SC, Notre Dame, Ohio State, Michigan, Alabama, and the rest of that level of competition. You know, there's probably more Heisman trophies out of Ohio State, Notre Dame, and USC than any other school in the country. And there's so much pride down at Notre Dame. There's so much pride in Notre Dame. And they hear all the talk shows and all this, the people talking about Notre Dame and how embarrassing it is and barely beating Navy. And, you know, when you think about it, Navy's the only team with a winning record that they've beaten this year. So they start looking at different things in the program. Has it improved? How's the recruiting? The offense isn't worth a darn, and this and that. And all of a sudden, you start making a list of why the program isn't any good. Yet, some of the top recruits in the country, and you know, that always hurts you as a coach when you have a great recruiting year or several great recruiting years or ranked high in recruiting by all these different services and you don't win. It costs you your job. Jerry Faust had that problem at Notre Dame. He had two or three number one recruiting class and didn't win, and he was gone. And, you know, Charlie sort of faced that same thing. Coach Weiss, you know, he's had great recruiting years, but you haven't seen the program improving. And some of the wins they've had are, you know, wins that could have gone the other way. You know, they could have beaten North Carolina. They could have beaten a couple of these other teams. They lost in the last second. They could have beat Pitt. They could have been, but could have and should have and all of that, just like SC could have been beat Oregon State. You know, you can't talk about that. Every game's a playoff game and so on. And, you know, when you look at the number of dollars that Notre Dame generates. Now, let's look at one phase of their program. Contributions to the university. The pride at Notre Dame. You look at their TV package. Their TV package is one that no one else has. They get something like $20 million or $24 million a year from NBC. And all of a sudden, NBC is going to say, if people aren't watching and the ratings are going down, hey, wait a minute. We might not want to renew this contract, or we're not getting the returns that we're paying you on, especially with the economy the way it is. So, you know, they get pressure there saying, hey, we got to win to be on national television. So there's a lot of different things that, you know, the marketing of their jerseys, their hats, it affects the morale of the school. It affects so much the football program to the school, the university, the boosters, and so on, because that school is basically known not only for its academics, but for the tradition of Notre Dame and football at Notre Dame. So it's huge, and, you know, I don't ever want to wish bad things on coaches, because everyone knows what coaching is all about today. When they pay you $4 million a year, they expect returns from that type of payment. So, you know, you sort of live with that and you wait and see what's going to happen. And I think this week's game with USC is a key as far as what's going
to
happen.
Yeah, I think we'll talk about that in a little bit. I wanted to touch on one thing. I was watching the game and I really couldn't believe it when they, you know, blew it at the end and gave up that touchdown to Syracuse. I started to see, you know, USC had a bye week, so it was fun. I could actually watch some games this weekend. Started to see some snowballs coming in from the stands, people being, you know, some of the snowballs being thrown on the field. What I saw on TV was just snowballs being thrown onto the field. Then I read some of the articles, and Pete Sampson does a good job covering Notre Dame for the Notre Dame USC rival site, the Notre Dame rival site. And he had written a story about, you know, there was players on the sidelines, on the bench, Notre Dame players getting hit by snowballs from the student section. You know, one guy got hit like twice, once in the back of the head, I think once in the face. I mean, it seems to be there's a lot of frustration, you know, in South Bend right now. I mean, this team, they kind of blamed Tyrone Willingham in the first couple of years. But, you know, now Charlie Weiss has been there quite a while. He's got a bunch of his own players in there now, and they're not seeing the same kind of results. I mean, it just seems like the frustration level is like super high right now.
No, it really is. And first of all, I don't condone that at all, because they, you should not put that on players. You should not put that on young student athletes that are out there that are trying and doing their best, and to throw snowballs or to boo college kids. I just don't buy that, okay? Now, people have a right because they pay to get in like anything else because of promotions and so on, or they pay and they... But I don't think that's right to boo your university or boo any team. You know, sometimes the officials get booed because they may blow a call of some type and so on. You know, I can condone that because I've said a few sharp words to officials too. But to boo teams, boo your home team, or throw snowballs, which is the same thing as booing your team. You know, causing that or condoning that, you know, that's not right. You know, if I was sitting next to a gentleman or a person throwing a snowball, then I'd say, hey, knock it off. You know, that's not right. Don't do that. So I don't like that. I don't think that's right. I think the administration has to make the right decisions on what's going to happen at Notre Dame. I heard today that people are saying the buyout agreement with Charlie Weiss is not as big as what a lot of people think. Who knows? But whatever's the best for Notre Dame and Notre Dame football and Coach Wise and so on, I hope it's done fairly. I hope that he has the opportunity to continue and give him a chance. But who knows? You know, the pressures sometime out there are so great that university officials are forced to make a change.
Coach, just talk about Charlie Weiss for a little bit. I mean, he kind of came in with a lot of fanfare. You know, he got signed to that huge extension after not having, you know, I don't know, I'm not sure why they signed it. I think a lot of people are questioning that. I think he actually signed, correct me if I'm wrong, Coach, but he signed a contract similar to what you had at UNLV. Is that correct, or?
Well, they sort of patterned it off of mine. The only difference was that the decimal point was at a different spot than the zeros, okay?
There wasn't as many commas. He wasn't, you know, not a... three comma.
Mine was the tip money.
But yeah, I mean, he obviously signed to a huge contract, many, many years. I mean, he's on the hot seat. I don't think there's any question that he's not on the hot seat, but because they signed him to such a long deal, how do you see this playing out? I mean, there was people talking about, you know, 50-50, if he can't beat USC. Obviously, if he beats USC, he can do what Carl Durrell did and save his job at least for another year. I'm not sure if firing him would be the right thing to do at this point. I mean, if you're a Notre Dame fan and you want to see, I mean, you almost have to give him another year. You're not, I'm not super satisfied with the direction he's been bringing the program, but I'm not sure firing coaches after every three or four years is going to help your program any. I mean, you know, another year you could get a little more stable. It's not the hardest schedule again next year. What do you make of the situation there? And do you think Coach Hyde, I mean, Coach Weiss, from what you've seen, has the capabilities of turning this thing around?
Well, let me just talk frankly, not as a coach and so on. I think he's in serious trouble. I think he's in serious trouble, and if I was to bet or say what's going to happen, I would say that if he loses to USC, I would think that he's going to be gone. They're going to end up 6-6. That's not satisfactory as far as for Notre Dame football fans paying someone $4 million a year or plus that, and they're not going in the direction that they want to go. There's, you know, stories that this university and him don't get along, that he's been arrogant to a lot of the past players, and he's tried to change and so on, and then all of a sudden he says, I'm going to call the plays the last two games, and probably the last two games have had their worst offensive performance that's happened at Notre Dame. To me, you know, when I watch Charlie, you know, he's got a bad leg, he's limping around, I don't know how healthy he is and so on, he's got a lot of pressure on him. Recruits, you know, are now starting probably to question their verbal commits and what's going to happen there. Maybe I'll pull out and go somewhere else and so on. If the players aren't happy, they don't do a great job of recruiting when they go home for the holidays. If you remember a few years ago, and it wasn't that long ago, Notre Dame was invited to a bowl game and they had only won 6 or 7 games. I forget what it was, or maybe it was 8 games. They didn't even accept the bowl game because they didn't consider it a good enough season that they should be honored or give their players and coaches a bonus to go to that bowl game. Now, if they were to go to a bowl game this year, wow, I tell you, what bowl game are they going to go to? Is that embarrassing for Notre Dame to play in a bowl game like that? Or or whoever they might play against in that bowl game, and then take the possibility of getting beat. I'm going to tell you, they don't want to play TCU. They don't want to play teams like that in a bowl game. If you remember, do you remember the bowl game when Oregon State played them in the Fiesta Bowl and blew them completely out? They don't need that type of embarrassment. So, you know, they're on that bubble right now. If they lose or, you know, they're bowl eligible and they can go, they might not want to go to a bowl game because it's just more pressure and more embarrassment on the football program if they go and some team from, you know, I'm not saying what conference it is, blows them out or beats them. What does that do of their image? And I think they're more concerned at Notre Dame about their image, the image they have, and how they represent that image and so on. You know, he's tried the green jerseys. He's tried the high grass, long grass back there when SC played. You know, he's tried all these different things, and he's failed at all of them, and he's been criticized at all of these things that he's done. So, you know, I think that this is a key game for him this Saturday, and that might not be enough. Even if he plays SC close and maybe even beats SC, I'm not sure that would even be enough.
Wow. I think if he beats SC, that's as a 29-point underdog or whatever, they would have to
30. Make give it the 30-point underdog.
But Coach, on the bowl game, it's interesting. I don't remember the exact year. It's like 1993 or 91, the last time Notre Dame's won a bowl game. But you could argue that they're always getting into higher bowl games than what they should. I mean, they shouldn't have really been in the Sugar Bowl a couple years ago, and they got smoked by LSU. They got smoked in that Fiesta Bowl by Oregon State. Now, after down year, they're going to be, you know, most likely 6-6 if they lose. You know, obviously, if they lose on Saturday, maybe they do get into a bowl that's more, you know, that's more at their level, where they do get to play a Maryland or somebody, you know, that's decent but not, you know, way better than them, and gives them a shot to at least win a bowl game. So if you win like the Detroit Car Care Bowl or whatever, at least you did win a bowl. You get that kind of monkey off your back. I don't know, Coach, maybe because of their record, they don't get in over their head in a bowl game like they have been in years past because of just their reputation.
Well, they've been getting into it. If you remember, they were the only team that the BCS allowed, not being in the conference, to get a BCS bowl game, because that's the reputation they had. They could go to a BCS bowl game if they're ranked in the top 12 in the country and play at a BCS bowl game and get the full amount that a whole conference used to get. You remember that?
Yeah, that's crazy.
Now they've changed that. They don't get that. They get what one team would get from a conference, because when they went to these bowl games, they were taking home $12 million for themselves. They didn't have to split with any conference or anybody. So that's what the image of Notre Dame and the power of what Notre Dame football has been. If they were to go and play in Maryland or somebody like you said there, that's not a definite. I think they'd be an underdog.
Oh, yeah, it's not a definite win, but at least it gives. It's not LSU where they were going to get smoked no matter what, you know?
Yeah, but that doesn't help their program. I would be a bit surprised if they would not accept the bowl game. I really wouldn't, because I don't know how it would help them. And if they were to get beat in the bowl game by one of these other teams, I'm not quite sure what it would do to their program. It hurt them more. So I don't know. They're in a real problem. They're in a difficult situation. They can't put off their decisions. They've either got to endorse Coach Wise or they've got to say, we're making a change. But the longer it goes, the worse it gets. So there's got to be a strong endorsement that comes out from the university, or they got to make a change.
All right, we're with the coach, Harvey Hyde. Coach, I think people have got to know your personality, at least if they listen to the local radio here in L.A. when you're on the pregame or on the Trojan Brunch. And, of course, here the last 41 weeks or so on the Peristyle podcast, get a feel for, you know, what makes you tick and what your personality is like. There's been a lot of talk about Charlie Weiss's personality and Coach Carroll as well. You know, Coach Carroll toiled in the NFL for years, and, you know, he got a lot of accolades. People, you know, liked him as a coach. He got fired twice, obviously, as a head coach. And when he came to college, it just seemed to be a perfect fit. You know, his personality seems to work better with the younger players, the players that aren't making millions of dollars. And, you know, his being able to control everything and recruit and just have, you know, his thumb on the entire program, it seems to work well for Coach Carroll. The results obviously speak for themselves. Charlie Weiss, I mean, I guess you could argue that, you know, you said before he's alienated a lot of people. Sometimes the players aren't real fans of him. There's talks of, you know, favoritism with certain players, things like that. There's a lot of those kind of rumblings. Do you buy into the theory that there's certain personalities that are definitely more suited towards one of the two aspects of football, NFL or college, for coaches?
Yeah, I really do. I think in college, you've got to be a player's coach. I really do. Players have got to want to play for you. You've got to be able to care about them. You can't spank a baby. You can't spank a kid unless you know that kid loves you. I'll tell you, but once that kid knows you love them and would do anything for them, hey, they'll cover that kickoff for you. They'll kill for you. And I think that's what Pete Carroll's personality is. He cares about the people. He cares about the community. He cares not only about the football team. He cares about his foundation. He cares about the volleyball team, the swimming team at USC. After the Washington game, I think it was the Washington game, where he could go out and celebrate or go home and watch the Oklahoma-Texas Tech game, his wife and him went to 5 games of the volleyball team at the Galen Center. Sat there. I mean, that's tremendous. I mean, who else does that? So he's this type of person. He's a people's person. He's got a great smile. He's a good-looking guy. He works the crowd. He's got a energy that's unbelievable. So, you know, he's a player's coach, and he's a university type of coach. He represents the university well. He may go down as the greatest all-time coach at USC. And you talk about the pros. He doesn't need to go to the pros. He's got his pro team. The only difference is he's the owner at SC and the coach and the general manager and everything. He makes all the decisions. And Mike Garrett and him work so well together that, you know, Mike Garrett makes it where, coach, whatever you need, let's do it. And that's the working togetherness that you really need. And I think, you know, some coaches go and try to work with kids and go in with a different attitude, like, you know, I'm this person and I come here with this reputation. You better buy in or get out. And kids will say, oh, really? Prove to me how good you are. And in the NFL, it's a different attitude. In the NFL, it's, I'll respect you if you can teach me something and keep me in the NFL. But the longer I play in the NFL, with the contracts that they have today, the more money I make in the NFL. So coaches like certain players like certain coaches in the NFL, not only because they win, but if they can enhance and extend their longevity and number of seasons, like Bill Belichick can do, by taking players and they play forever and ever and ever when they can't play for someone else, hey, they love coaches like that, and they'll do anything he says because they know it works.
Yeah. Now, you've been a part of, you know, the coaching fraternity for quite a while. Is there anything Charlie Weiss, in your opinion, can do? I mean, if that's just his personality, can he learn on the job? Can he say, you know what, I have to treat these guys more like my kids than I do underlings or employees? Is there something he can do, or is it kind of, in your opinion, if that's the way he is, it's just not going to change?
Well, you know, I used to always tell my assistant coaches when they got a head job, don't change because they interviewed you and they liked you for the way you are. And you can't change. You know, you either have a personality or you have the energy level or you don't. You know, you've seen all coaches win. You've seen Jim Tressel, the way he wins. He doesn't show a lot of emotion, but his players love him. You can see that. They love him. If you're around an Ohio State alumnus from who played for Woody Hayes, hey, you better not say anything bad about not Ohio State. You might be able to say something bad about Ohio State, but don't ever say anything bad about Woody Hayes. You're in deep trouble. So, you know, there's a passion there between your players and the coaches and the coaching staff itself. I don't know if it's too late for him to change his attitude. He did try to change by giving up the offensive coordinatorship, open up his practices to the alumni, where at first he did not have open practices. If you were an All-American at Notre Dame and you wanted to go watch practice, you couldn't go watch practice. And that really upset a lot of people, especially the players that have played there, because they looked at Charlie Weiss as, what did you do at Notre Dame? And don't get me wrong, but he went to Notre Dame, but he didn't play at Notre Dame. You know, Rudy played more plays than he did. So, you know what I mean? So it's not that he wasn't a great offensive coordinator for New England. He was. But, you know, maybe not everybody fits the architect of a certain type of environment and situation. You know, SC struggled, too, at times with a couple of their coaches. And they lost a little bit of their momentum for several years. But Pete Carroll's come back and brought that momentum back. So, you know, you've got to look to find the right combination of the right coach to fit the right keyhole that turns the key and opens the door and everything works right.
Now, you mentioned Woody Hayes, and I think with guys like that, you know, especially some of the older coaches that are a little more gruff and were very, you know, they're stern and strict and kind of ruled with an iron fist. I think if you won under guys like that, even today, then you would have kind of the respect of the players and you would have their devotion. You know, if Charlie Weiss was going to a BCS bowl game every year and, you know, he was kind of gruff and people didn't like him, I think they would still defend him because they were winning. And, you know, maybe you don't like him, maybe you don't like the way he treats you or the way he treats other people or he plays favorites or whatever, but he's winning. I mean, I think the bad part now is unless he can turn it around and win, he has to change. If he wants to be a college coach, it seems like he's going to have to change. Like you said, he made some changes. He would have to. Otherwise, without that winning factor, you're not going to have any of these people having your back because you're not putting up the W's on the scoreboard.
No, you're exactly right. And I'll tell you, I'll give you an example of a coach that can do that. Are you ready?
Sure.
Nick Saban. Nick Saban has won at every university he's been at. And he went and he coached the Dolphins, and it just didn't work. He came back now at LSU. You ever watch him during the game? Man, I'm going to tell you, don't be standing next to him.
No.
I'll tell you, he is into it. You better run off the field. You better run on the field. If you're assistant coach, you better turn the volume down because you're going to yell on the phone anyway. You're going to be able to hear him no matter where you are, even if you're in the press box without a headset on. So, you know, but he's a coach, and they buy into who he is, and he's proven himself in college. And they're buying. Look what he's done in 2 years at Alabama. So, you know, people see this, and they say, well, why can't we do this at Notre Dame? So, you know, you've got to have the right chemistry. You've got to be able to go to a university with the philosophy of knowing college kids and get it done. Nick Saban would win wherever he goes. Look at Bill Snyder now, coming back at 69 years old at Kansas State University. I know Bill when he was used to be a high school coach at Foothill High School in Orange County. You probably don't know this. And, you know, he went on and look at him at 69 years old, coming back. I'm glad he's not in the division, though, with Oklahoma, Texas Tech, in that group. He's in over with Nebraska and Missouri and them. But to come back to try to bring back the pride in the Kansas State football program, which isn't bad, except he taught them how to win there. And they wanted to win there. And he won more games there combined than anybody in the history of the school has won. So Bill Snyder comes back, gets a new contract, and is going to try to straighten it out. But it's not easy to do because kids have got to relate to you. You've got to know who you are. And in this situation, Bill Snyder's got to get himself a great staff, just like Joe Paterno has. Hey, Joe Paterno isn't calling plays. Joe Paterno isn't running around the field teaching people how to block. Joe Paterno is the image and the foundation of Penn State football. I mean, here's a guy, one day after he accepts the invitation of going to the Rose Bowl, is having his hip surgery done. I mean, isn't he amazing? And he's out of the hospital already. He's out of the hospital doing his rehab. And you watch, when he comes to Pasadena, he'll throw his cane down, and he'll be ready to go.
Yeah, Coach, does that inspire you? You see Snyder coming back, Paterno, Bowden. Do you want to get back into the coaching ranks anytime, or are you done?
Well, right now I'm having more fun with you.
All right. Well, that's good. One quick thing. I know we're running really long on this one, but hopefully everyone's enjoying it. I remember when Coach Hackett, I know it's a bad word around USC, so sorry, everybody. You could say he who should not be named or whatever, but Coach Hackett came in. They were doing their fall camp down at UC Irvine, and it was pretty brutal. And the players had just come back from that, and they were doing like three workouts a day. I mean, he was getting worked really hard, and the players were getting worked really hard. And I sat down with one of the offensive linemen and was chatting with him, and he was saying, I'm like, you know, what do you think about this? Is this worth it? And, you know, what do you think the results are going to be? And he was pretty frank. He's like, he didn't mind doing it as long as it worked, as long as they won. But if they weren't winning, he knew that they were, you know, it was just more like a boot camp thing, and they were just getting pushed around for the sake of being pushed around, as opposed to someone had this master plan that if you work this hard, you're going to, it's going to translate into wins. And obviously for Coach Hackett, that didn't end up happening.
Didn't happen, but, you know, there's a philosophy everyone has, and you've got to make sure that the kids buy into what you do and they see results from it. It's like anything else. How would you like to have a tutor? Remember, a coach is a teacher. You'd like to have a tutor for a class, and he tutors you for a test, and you failed the test and didn't know one answer. You'd start to think, is it me? Is it me that I understand? I got admitted to the school, or am I not learning the proper way? When I ask a question, I'm not grasping what I'm supposed to be grasping to be successful and pass the test. You know, on Saturdays when you play a football game, you know, you've been preparing and studying all week with game plans. You're supposed to pass the test, which means if my X is bigger than your O and I can't pass the test, if I'm smarter than you are, which comes to athletic ability against other teams, then somehow I'm not being tutored right or taught right. That just makes sense. So, you know, that's what you have to look at, and that's can be good for you or can be bad for you. Depending if you're successful and you get the A, then it's good for you. It's good for the teacher. If you can't pass the class, then it's not good for either.
Right. All right, Coach. Well, thank you very much for this little extended segment. We get to, it's always fun talking about Notre Dame and the rivalry and stuff. So we'll talk to you next week. Hope you have a great Thanksgiving, and we'll be able to review this game and talk about the big one with UCLA.
You got it, buddy. And by the way, I want to mention this. I don't know if you know this. Tim Davis, who was the offensive line coach at USC.
Yes, yes.
He was just hired this week at the University of Minnesota.
Oh, great. Good luck for him. And he was a fun guy. Another guy that was kind of polarizing. He was very stern. And I did a lot of yelling, a lot of screaming, but a lot of people liked him.
I liked him. I think he was the best. I really do. I loved it when Ed Orgeron and him used to go against each other.
Yeah, that was
wow. Wasn't that great?
That was some fun battles.
Yep. Well, listen, happy Thanksgiving to everyone out there. Sit back, relax, enjoy football, and I tell you, just be happy that we're all, you know, have this opportunity to enjoy the great American game.
Yes, Coach, thank you very much. Hope you enjoy your time in Catalina. Everyone else, we'll have a really quick break and come back talking to Gary Klein of the LA Times.
The Peristyle Podcast will be back after this short break. Tickets, tickets, tickets. SC Tickets is your concert, sports, and theater ticket source. We have the tickets you need to any event worldwide. Football tickets are now available. Call SC Tickets now at 1-800-888-7287. 1-800-888-7287. That's 1-800-888-7287. Or visit us on the web at sctickets.com. SC Tickets, concert, sports, and theater.
Hey, USC Trojan fans, to get into the huddle of your Southern Cal Trojans, log on to uscfootball.com today for all the latest in Trojan football, basketball, and recruiting news. Ryan Abraham will give you an in-depth analysis, recruiting updates, and will answer your questions every day on the message board. So for all the latest in team and recruiting news on your USC Trojans, check out uscfootball.com, the officially licensed Southern Cal site of the Rivals.com network.
We now return to the Peristyle Podcast and your host, Ryan Abraham.
Welcome back to the Peristyle Podcast. As promised, we have a very special guest in this segment of the podcast. We are joined by Los Angeles Times USC beat writer, Gary Klein. Gary, how's everything going today?
Great, Ryan. Thanks for having me with you.
Ah, no problem, everyone. Gary Klein, if you're not familiar with his work, you definitely should be. He's been the USC beat writer for the last 7 years for the LA Times. He's also the co-author of Conquest, a book that came out a few years ago, Pete Carroll and the Trojans Climb to the Top of the College Football Mountain. He wrote that with David Wharton, and have a really nice foreword by Pat Hayden. So, Gary, people still talking about that book? It came out a few years ago.
Yeah, it still does come up occasionally. I think people who kind of pine for that those first 4 years when Carroll and Chow and Orgeron and that gang was all together, that's really the time that the book encapsulates, or at least attempts to, kind of carrying over from the Hackett era into the way that Carroll turned it around and ultimately led them to the BCS title in 2004.
Yeah, it's definitely a must-read for Trojan fans. I like going back and looking through it again. You pick up stuff that you kind of forgot about, so check it out. I'm sure you can get it. Probably get it on Amazon and any place online.
I think you can get it on Amazon. The USC bookstore I know carries it and it continues to sell. So those are both places you can get it.
All right, you can check that out. So Gary obviously had a bye week. I just wanted to talk briefly. There was a strange part of the beginning of the season was a little strange. They had like a bye week and then another bye week with that Thursday game. They played 8 games in a row. And now they had a bye week there. Do you think this is coming at a good time, or do you think they should have just, it would have been easier for them to play right through and not have any more bye weeks the rest of the season?
No, I think this one actually came at a perfect time for them, just in terms of, as you mentioned, they had that 8-game stretch where as fit as these players are, that's quite a long stretch to play without a break. And I think given that they've got the 2 rivalry games with Notre Dame and UCLA coming up at the end, it gave them a chance to not only heal some of the guys that had some bumps and bruises that weren't so obvious, it also gave someone like Kevin Ellison an extra week to attempt to get back in time for his final game at the Coliseum and possibly UCLA and then the bowl game. So from a momentum standpoint, it hasn't struck me that they were really rolling on some unstoppable force. It really actually, I think, gave them a chance to regroup after that Stanford game and kind of figure out how they wanted to approach these last few games. So. Again, I think it came at a good time for them.
Obviously, Notre Dame is not, they're not riding some some super wave of college football, blissfulness or anything. I mean, they're struggling. They just lost to Syracuse. It's a big rivalry game, and I think Pete Carroll does put a lot of focus into it. But is there any chance this could be one of those they overlook the opponent just because Notre Dame's struggling so much?
I don't think so. One of the reasons I think, as you mentioned, it's a big game, and while it may not be quite as huge as it has in some years past in terms of different things that are riding on it, in terms of Heisman trophies or national championships or anything like that, I think once game time is there and that Coliseum is full and the sun has set, I think there will be plenty of buzz and whatnot. But I think the fact that it's the final home game for these seniors, for another a very successful senior class, that's kind of going to be the focus this week. And I think by the time USC gets onto the field, while they're very much aware of how Notre Dame has struggled, I don't think it's going to make much difference on Saturday. I don't see this as a game. If we wanted to go back to like an early season game at Oregon State where the opponent is going to be overlooked just because there's too much focus on this. It's the end of the year. They're trying to, salvage a good bowl game, maybe with a long shot chance of getting to that title game. I just don't see a drop off at this point.
Yeah. You mentioned the Heisman trophies. It's kind of interesting. USC played Ohio State and Notre Dame this season and each of those schools lead the nation with 7 Heisman trophies each. So yeah, there's a lot on the line there. Have you seen this rivalry evolve at all? In the 7 years you've been covering USC, obviously USC won the last 6 of them, but have you seen it change at all with Charlie Weiss coming in and doing what he's doing?
Well, as you mentioned, I've only been covering it every year I've covered it. USC has won, so there hasn't been much change there. But of course, there was that stretch where USC couldn't beat Notre Dame for a long stretch either. So it's kind of come and gone. I think, like most people, I think after that 2005 game, such a dramatic game at Notre Dame, I kind of looked at it as geez, this is going to really be exciting year after year after year with Carroll and Weiss and how I think and a lot of people thought recruiting would go for Notre Dame based on some of that, some of the impact that he had initially. But it hasn't. It just hasn't. I think last year was a real eye-opener for people just in terms of how much distance there seemed to be between the programs to go there and shut them out. With your backup quarterback, although he played well, I think spoke volumes. And just kind of the speed that was on the field or wasn't on the field for Notre Dame and some of those, some of those things, I came away from that game thinking, wow, this is, there's much more ground to be made up than I think anyone thought initially.
Yeah, you mentioned that 2005 game. And, you know, obviously with Charlie Weiss struggling and a lot of the Notre Dame fans talking about buyouts and he got that super extension. I mean, I think the big feather in Weiss's cap was the game that he lost. That game with, you know, it was so close and they almost beat, you know, Bush and Leinart and all those guys. But it was his biggest impact, it seemed to be a game that he lost to USC.
I think you're right. And if I'm not mistaken, that's the game after which he signed such a long contract extension that Notre Dame wanted to lock him up. Now, I think it's fashionable this week, to jump on the bandwagon and bash Charlie Weiss and say he's done. And you know what? He may be. Who knows? But, we've seen in college football things go in cycles. So we'll have to see if Notre Dame actually drops the axe if USC beats them. That wouldn't surprise a lot of people. But at the same time, who knows, maybe they'll give him another year or two and we'll see if they can get that thing turned around.
Now, what you got to hear him this week, what did he sound? I mean, it didn't sound like he was a defeated coach or anything, but it did sound like he had an uphill battle at least coming up on Saturday.
Yeah, he didn't sound defeated, but I think anyone who listened to his press conferences over the last few years before the USC game, it was a much different vibe. I think those press conferences where he kind of sits up there and basically goes through USC's roster, you know, position by position, man by man, with stats and everything else, left most people thinking, wow, you know, it was something you just don't normally get with opposing coaches. And that's not the way it's been this week. He's obviously been under fire, fielding questions from the media and not only about his situation, but about the situation of the program. So it's just been a much different feel than it has been the last few years.
I want to talk about the rivalry games a little bit. You mentioned they play UCLA the following week. From, you interact with a lot of people, anyone else, if you come to practice, you definitely want to talk to Gary Klein, one of the nicest guys out there for sure. But just when you're talking to people, talking to players, do you feel that any of the players or some of the fans feel that Notre Dame is a bigger rivalry than UCLA or vice versa? Or does it kind of change each year when, the teams play out there?
Well, I don't think the UCLA rivalry ever really dies. No matter who's dominating the series, who's been winning the games or whatnot, that seems to be the most fervent for everyone. Notre Dame, it strikes me, the old guard, people over 40 or whatnot, they still regard that as a huge rivalry and they enjoy the give and take and the traditions and that go with a series that dates back, to this now at the 80th game. And when they're both good, when Notre Dame is good and when USC is good, there maybe is nothing better in college football. It's terrific. But UCLA doesn't have to be very good, or in years past, USC didn't have to be very good, I think, for that rivalry to always be strong, to always bring out a lot of emotion on both sides. And I think that's kind of how it is today as well.
Yeah, it seems definitely the younger generation. And I mean, to be honest, the fans pretty much haven't, if you're a recent graduate, you haven't lost as a USC fan to either Notre Dame or UCLA except for that one time a couple of years ago. But it does seem like the older guard, like you said, that so much history there. Not as much hatred. It seems like there's more respect than the real hatred there is with the crosstown rival.
That's the sense that I get. Although I think, on some levels there, and I don't know if hatred is necessarily the word, but jealousy, envy, whatever, there's definitely an element, of that, I think, in the Notre Dame USC rivalry. But as you mentioned, I think that's conducted on a little bit more respectful level, save for a few incidents that have happened on the, well publicized incidents that have happened on the field and the tunnel and whatnot. I don't think there's a comparison. The UCLA, the UCLA connection, the local part of it, the fact that, most of these players have played against each other or grown up together, and just, the alumni bases in Southern California are so fervent that that's always makes for a special week and a fun week.
Yeah, okay. We're with Gary Klein of the Los Angeles Times, the longtime USC beat writer. You said the 80th matchup between these two schools, obviously it's a long history there, a lot of tradition. I don't know if there's ever been one that they had more than a 4-touchdown spread in one way or the other. I mean, 30-point, 29-point, whatever you want to say, favorites for USC. This seems like kind of unprecedented in the whole history of this rivalry.
I have not yet got to the research in terms of the biggest spreads, but I have to imagine that this is the largest, if not one of the largest. And, you know, I think that speaks to a couple things. That speaks to the perception of the state of the Notre Dame program right now, coming off that loss against Syracuse, the uncertainty surrounding Weiss. But I think a lot of that also has to do with USC and the fact that this is kind of the stretch run. You know, the odds makers, I think, are well aware of how Carroll's teams have done through November and how they've done against Notre Dame. The fact that USC, while still a long shot to get to the national championship game, obviously is going to go out there and try and impress as many people as they can. And with the bye week and that week to get healthy, they should be raring to go.
The game, obviously, with the 29-point spread, 30-point spread, not a lot of people are predicting it's going to be that close. But Notre Dame has had success against Pac-10 teams. I mean, their only road win did come against Washington, albeit Washington is not a very powerful team. Do you expect them to come out and kind of play well just because, you know, because of that loss, and just come out and play better than a lot of the experts are predicting?
Well, they're certainly hoping that they're going to. But there's another factor at play here, and I don't think it can be discounted. And it'll obviously be very interesting for people in Southern California to watch. This is Jimmy Clausen's first game at the Coliseum. And for a local player, especially a quarterback, to come back and play in this environment, packed stadium, so much riding on it, program struggling, you'd think, you know, the odds are against him performing very, very well in his first game in this kind of setting in his hometown. Now, he may defy that. He may play very well. But my sense is that he's going to be a little bit nervous, and it's going to take him maybe some time to get going. And I think that, again, plays into USC's favor, if in fact that's what transpires. Because I think if USC gets up early, given all that's happening with Notre Dame, for that team to get down and to get down early, it's going to be very difficult to come back and beat USC at home.
You make up a really good point with Clausen, and I think a lot of people were talking about some of the recruits that go back and forth. You know, one thing, Pete Carroll seems to play really well against guys that, you know, he kind of wanted. And he came out and said this week, you know, that was, he was definitely recruiting Clausen. That was a guy that they wanted. It was a better situation because he could step in and start right away at Notre Dame. But it seems like Pete Carroll gets up for those games a little bit more, where there are guys, high-profile guys, that didn't go his way.
Well, I don't know if he gets up for them anymore, but certainly there's a familiarity he has with those kids, and his staff anyway has with those kids, because they recruited them. They got to know them. He saw him play a lot. So he's not only watching, you know, what he sees on game film, but he's got a little bit of background in terms of how he performed in high school and what his mindset might be and all those kinds of things. I think they all add up to, you know, to give coaches, to give, you know, USC players a little bit of an advantage because they know what they're up against. I think, for example, the first time they played Jake Locker, you know, there was a little bit of an unknown element there. Everyone knew he was really good, but there weren't too many players from SC that had played against him or seen him in high school. So he had there were some plays he made that I think if he had been a local player, you know, maybe guys are a little bit more familiar with what he likes to do and what he doesn't like to do. I think with Clausen, again, the thing that's going to be interesting is coming home and playing in a stadium in an area where he's from and where so many people are familiar with him. He obviously wants to do well against USC. I mean, he wants to lead his team to victory and help Notre Dame, you know, get back on track. And if he was able to lead them to a win at the Coliseum, that would be the biggest win of his college career. So there's a lot that goes into that, and you'd like to think, that quarterbacks are calm, cool, and collected, and nothing rattles them. But that's a lot to handle, I think, for a guy, for a sophomore. So we'll see how he does.
Yeah, man, that USC defense is probably going to be ready to go, especially if their running game, if it isn't working, I think they're going to be after Klaassen. But you mentioned there was an interesting thing I wanted you to touch on today and one of the piece you put in the LA Times. Speaking of the recruiting aspect, you talked about what Chris Galippo did on his trip out to Notre Dame. If you would like to share that story, I thought it was pretty interesting.
Well, I knew he was, having come from Servite High in Anaheim, which had produced Steve Berline, former Notre Dame quarterback and good pro with the Raiders and whatnot. I figured he was in the mix there, would at least be looking at Notre Dame, even though he was a very early commit to USC. So I just asked him, you know, about his experience and contact with Notre Dame, and he told me a funny story about going back there for a junior day. And that's also, I think, when Mark Tyler was back there and Jimmy Klaassen was back there, a whole group of kids, and many of them very, you know, highly regarded prospects. And, you know, he just started laughing. He said, you know, I went all the way back there, and the thing I remember, you know, I saw the campus and, you know, saw a whole bunch of things, but the thing I remember is that, you know, we didn't even shake my hand. I went 3,000, you know, 3,000 miles cross country, and Coach Weiss didn't acknowledge him. He said, you know, I kind of looked at him but sideways, and he was like, well, you know, it's not, I don't really have any hard feelings. I know that things, you know, happen, and he's probably busy and everything else. And he did remember it. And I don't think if it had been something that didn't strike him as a little bit odd, he would have remembered it so vividly.
Yeah, that's pretty, I laugh because it's not, this isn't a kid that was, you know, unknown. I mean, he was definitely well known. You know, came from the high school where, you know, Ryan Khalil came out of. And, you know, I think they were getting a lot of, you know, the school was getting a lot of hype. They produced some really good players there. And he was a five-star guy. So it wasn't like he was an unknown commodity. I find that funny. Any five-star guy, even if you know he's not interested in the program, you would think the head coach would want to come over and at least acknowledge the kid being there.
Well, you'd think so. And I don't know all the circumstances. I don't know what was on Charlie Weiss's schedule that day or how they organized their junior day. But based on what Galippo had to say, it was kind of interesting.
I think this leads to personality questions. And I talked to Coach Harvey Hyde in the first segment about this a little bit, trying to get your thoughts. I mean, Pete Carroll's personality, if you go to the junior days down there at USC, I mean, they know where the good players are, and you know they'll pay special extra attention to those guys because you know it's just the way he kind of rolls. And he keeps it competitive. He tries to run it a lot like you know his normal practices are that you see every day. I mean, they're very competitive, and his personality just seems to be well suited to the college game. You know, you talk about Charlie Weiss and just you know talk about what he's done there. There have been some complaints about it, and I just wanted to get your thoughts on his personality, Charlie Weiss's personality, and how you think it's suited for this college, you know, this game of college football that we like.
Well, you know, I don't deal with him on a daily basis like I deal with Carroll, so I can't necessarily speak to, you know, how he operates or in terms of his personality. Really, the only thing I've gotten with Charlie Weiss is what he presents to the media. But I will say that I've heard some of the same remarks that I'm sure you've heard, some of the same scuttlebutt. The problem, I think, for Charlie Weiss and for a lot of coaches when you put them in the same conversation with Carroll is that there just aren't that many, you know, maybe Urban Meyer, you know, perhaps Bob Stoops. I'm sure there are some other out there, but those are the guys that come to mind, Mack Brown, that they're going to be very good in the living room when they're recruiting. They're going to be very good on campus when there are recruits around. They have the kinds of personalities, I think, that young people are going to gravitate toward. And I don't know that you get that same sense with Charlie Weiss. I just don't get the sense that he allows that he's either like that or that he allows himself to be that way. And I think with a certain kind of high school player, that's probably appealing, and to some parents, I think it's very appealing. But I don't think you can, you know, I don't think it's really a fair comparison. But to put him side by side with Carroll in terms of personality, I'm not quite sure that's a fair comparison.
Yeah, I don't know. Not too many people compare with Pete Carroll's personality. It's a pretty big one out there. Let's talk about the defense a little bit. You mentioned Kevin Ellison coming back. I looked up at the stats today, and his replacement, Will Harris, actually moved his way up to, like, I think, 7th or 8th on the team in tackles. He has 30 tackles there. He seemed to come in and step in and do a really nice job in Kevin Ellison's place. It's almost like that position, you just have to be near the line of scrimmage, and you're going to make tackles in this Pete Carroll defense.
That's what it seems like. And as you mentioned, I think Harris, who is a very aggressive player, has stepped in and done very well in Ellison's place. It'll be interesting to see if Kevin gets back to near 100%, how much he'll play against Notre Dame, because I think he obviously wants to play his final game in the Coliseum, and I think Carroll would love to have him be able to do that. But I don't think they want to put him in too much harm's way if they don't have to, especially with Harris playing so well. So that'll be an interesting situation to watch.
Yeah, if they get out to an early lead, of course. I mean, who knows what's going to happen there. But the leaders on defense, I don't think there's any surprise. You know, Cushing and Maluga are right up there, number one, number two. I think Maluga and Cushing actually 1 and 2 in tackles. Have you seen them kind of mature as the year goes on? And what have you thought of their play?
Well, I think they've both gotten better. I think they both made the right decision to come back and play that final season. I think, you know, for Cushing, I think it was kind of a no-brainer just because he had been hurt last year. But Maluga, from start to finish, I think has grown quite a bit. He seems to be not only making spectacular plays, which he had always made on occasion, he just seems to be in the right place at the right time and staying on assignment a lot more than he used to. And I think that's his improved play has corresponded with USC's domination on defense, at least of the opponents, you know, that they've come up against. And from everything I've heard, he continues to raise his pro stock. I think Cushing benefited a little bit from Ray going down against Oregon State, even though that cost USC. It allowed Cushing to move over and play the middle and show pro scouts that he can play inside as well as outside. So they've both definitely, I would say, benefited from playing this final season, and my guess is that they will both be rewarded handsomely, in April on draft day if they continue to play well through the end of the season and they test well through the combine process.
Yeah, and you mentioned right place at the right time. I don't know. I mean, that seems to describe Clay Matthews pretty well. I mean, he's kind of come out of nowhere, 4 sacks, a couple fumbles, fumble recoveries, a couple of forced fumbles. He blocked a kick. He's up there with 45 tackles. I mean, he's been around the program a while, but it's been kind of surprised how well he's done and just shining in his senior year. He's probably made some money for himself as well.
Yeah, he'll be another one that'll be interesting to watch on draft day, just because he shined early, I think, in his career as a special teams guy and just one of those guys that was always around the ball and always eager to get onto the field after, you know, kind of choosing to stay out his first year when he had some options to get onto the field. He saved that redshirt year of that love for the game that the Matthews family seems to have. So it seems like it's all coming together for him, as you mentioned, at the right time. And he's obviously one of those guys that's looking for a big finish, too, to kind of not only cap his career, but kind of propel him to the next level.
It's one of the seniors on the team, Patrick Turner, kind of had a rocky career to start. I think there was a lot of expectations with the Mike Williams and Dwayne Jarrett tag. But, you know, he's got 500 yards. I think he leads the team with 8 touchdown receptions. How do you think he's progressed and what, you know, his role on the team has been?
I think Turner's quietly had a very, very good year. Some real clutch catches, has looked really good in the red zone inside the 20, has made some big touchdown catches. And I think early in the year, Damian Williams kind of stole the spotlight a little bit, came in as the new guy, the transfer that was and looked like he was going to be the guy that would save them from kind of the foibles that they had last year with the receiving core. But I think that allowed Turner, again, in a quiet way, to step up. And I don't think you can complain too much about the season he has had for SC. I think he's developed, at least from what I've seen over the years in practice and now here finally as a senior. He's using his body in a way that I think people had hoped he would early in his career, and for whatever reason, he wasn't able to, but I think he's got that down now. He's using that long frame and that big frame in a way that, if not quite as dominating as Mike Williams or as athletic as Dwayne Jarrett, he's kind of found his niche, so to speak, I guess, and the way he uses his body to his advantage. So he's had a good season. I'm sure. Again, he's a guy that's showing NFL scouts that he may have a future at the next level as well.
All right, we're with Gary Klein, the LA Times. One more for you. Sorry, Gary, we've had you on quite a while, but it's always interesting to get your insights and thoughts on what's going on here. I think a lot of people are expecting a big game from the USC defense. You talked about Clawson. They're probably going to try and get after him. The biggest question probably going in is which USC offense is going to show up. Is it going to be the 17-point variety, or is it going to be the 40-50 kind of point variety? What are you expecting from this USC offense on Saturday?
Again, they've had 2 weeks for this to get ready for this. I think that helped Sanchez get a little bit healthy. I don't think he complained too much or too loudly about a sprained ankle that he had a few weeks ago, but I think that's something that that affected him. I think the coach's decision to really pull back the passing game against Cal for fear of interceptions and how that carried over, you know, to the next couple games affected him. And I think having these 2 weeks to get ready, to get comfortable, he had success last year against Notre Dame. I expect a little bit more wide open attack against a defense that, has obviously struggled. So I wouldn't be surprised to see a much more balanced look than we saw, you know, in the second half against Stanford. I think they're going to give Sanchez an opportunity to throw the ball to kind of play to his aggressiveness a little bit. He's been really good at managing the game, doing what they want in terms of avoiding interceptions. But this is kind of a showcase game, and I think especially if they get out early, I wouldn't be surprised at all to see them open it up.
All right. He's Gary Klein, LA Times beat writer, the author, co-author of Conquest, along with David Wharton. Thank you so much for joining us and sharing all your insights on the Trojans today.
Hey, Ryan, it's always good to be with you, and I hope you'll have me back.
Oh, definitely, for sure. And everyone else, thank you very much. That's the end of our podcast for this week. We'll be back next week talking about what happened in that Notre Dame game and giving a preview of UCLA.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. And don't forget, you can now download the podcast directly to your iPod or MP3 player. Just search for Peristyle Podcast the next time you log into iTunes.